So we believe in a God who not only reveals the truth about himself, which is like very radical, actually. I think we kind of take that for granted sometimes, that of course a creator God would want us to know who he is. But that's a big deal, and that he doesn't reveal himself just hypothetically, but that he would come and meet me. But then what we see in this parable is that this isn't just a truth that reveals himself, but in the process of his revealing himself, he also reveals us. In my process of discovering truth about all this, I've learned a lot about this. So this parable tells us we can know the truth and be known by it, which is just like such good news. Because that feeling of being known is so comfy. And the feeling of being unknown and misunderstood is like such a deep pain. So Jesus meets us there and understands us. And then I think the question that this parable asks is, what might keep me from receiving this truth, from receiving this word of good news? I think most of the teachings I've heard on this passage jump into how to evangelize the world and like what's wrong with all those people out there and why they might not want to listen to you. But evangelism starts at home. It starts with preaching to myself and teaching myself the truth. So we're going to start there this morning of just asking ourselves what might keep us from receiving truth. What might keep me from receiving good news today? So we read the first accounting of the parable, and then I'm going to walk us through the way that Jesus explains it. So if you'd like to open with me to Matthew 13, we'll read verse 19. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is what was sown along the path. I really love this picture of a carefree sower. Like, he hasn't even gotten to the garden yet, and he's just like, I don't really walk through life like that. I think I hold some things like as good as the gospel really tight, and really share it so intentionally. And I like this picture of a sower such as Jesus, who's just like, some truth for you and some truth for you, and whatever happens, happens. Just like that non-anxious presence. But why doesn't that bear fruit? What is a path for? Walking on. That was too easy of a question. Everyone's like, who's going to say it? A path is for walking on. So the way that Matthew recounts misses this word, but I really like Luke says that the seed on the path gets trampled, because that's what we do on a path, is we just walk along it, and the dirt gets harder and more compact, and whatever's on it, we walk on that too. Some of us have been walked all over. Is that true? Yeah. And then we harden ourselves in like this self-protection. We feel like we need to protect ourselves, and so we get skeptical about whatever truth is offered to us. And the gospel sounds too good to be true. And we've received things that sound really good and believed them and been let down by them over and over and over. And so when the gospel comes to us in really specific and personal ways, we can get defensive, we can put our walls up and harden, because what if we get let down again? I really see that in my work with students who are walking away from the church or have some idea of what the church would be like that they've been hypothetically hurt by. I have some pretty significant church hurt in my life that I've been healing from in this safe space. But still, like, if I'm somewhere else on a Sunday morning or at a conference, I find it really hard to be soft enough to hear something good there. Like, I'm just so worried about getting hurt. So I'm kind of working on, like, letting my defenses down, because I don't want to be hurt by a false Jesus, and I have been. And so I put my walls up, but then sometimes I miss out. That's what I've been finding this year, is like, if I can be soft and let Jesus protect me instead of me protecting myself, there's some pieces that I had been missing out on, of hearing the gospel from a different voice. Yeah. I just think that the more I think about church hurt and spiritual trauma, the more evil I see it to be. And this was a revelation of that again this week, that like, it's not just that some of these kids were hurt one time and so they missed out and were wounded there, but it's like what comes from that, that then they miss out. I don't know why I'm saying them, because it's me. Like, so there's this sin against me, but then I go on sinning and missing out because I'm operating out of that woundedness, right? So when the parable says that evil comes and snatches away that seed that's been trampled on, like that stolen innocence, right? That's all those pieces of goodness that I've missed out on in 20 years because I was stepped on once. Matthew 13, 20 through 21. As for what was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself. He endures for a while, and when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, he immediately falls away. You know that feeling when you hear about something that's happening and you're like, I gotta be there. I gotta go. And you get like all excited about going and you're on your way, and then like all these barriers come up and you're like, never mind. Too much work. Lexi and I just found out about a concert that's happening in June that we're like, we're going. We're going. We're getting everybody. We're all gonna go. And I've been through this before. We're gonna get there. Don't worry. It's gonna happen. But there have been times in my life where I've been like, let's go. And then we're on our way and it's like childcare falls through or you get sick or it's just a lot of work. You're like, oh, never mind, it's fine. I'm okay where I am. That like high and then just kind of missing the follow through. But what about when it's something more important? What about when it's your parenting? Clayton and I have read all the studies about TV and what it does to a little brain, and so we've had seasons of real conviction of like, no TV, you can read books. Or we'll put a limit on it of half an hour, and the follow through on that is hard. Like, and I really mean it when I say it. And then she asks to watch Boss Baby, and she asks, it's so cute. And then I could get a whole hour of sermon prep done, and what about when a new neighbor moves in and you're so excited to meet them and the opportunity to love them well, but then they're not so lovable? It's not quite as easy or fun as it sounded. It's uncomfortable and embarrassing to name that stuff, hey? Like, I'd rather just pretend that Ari doesn't even know what a TV is, and all my neighbors know me and know Jesus because of me, and we're gonna go to that concert and every concert we've ever dreamed of. Like, it's kind of embarrassing, and I think that's even, I have some resistance to this parable before I started prepping, because it's pretty intense to just be like, Jesus just kind of pokes the thing, hey? Just like, hey, sometimes you're like this. To have Jesus name this propensity in us to bail on the things that we really, really value, to bail on them when it gets hard, and then have Jesus name that is not comfortable or fun. But it's just, it's not the way that we're used to, right? The way that Jesus points it out does not have shame. It's really, really gentle. And it doesn't leave us there. He just names it so that he can meet us there. But Jesus is way too good to just pretend that it's all good. To just pretend that it doesn't matter how I raise my daughter and I'm all good. or to pretend that it doesn't matter how I love my neighbor. Jesus is just comfy naming the hard stuff, and that's what I want to learn from him, to name the hard stuff that I'm kind of embarrassed about. I've gotten really passionate about confession since being at this church, that confession can be beautiful. It's not just like, you're a worm. And so I've been trying to practice that. And something that's kind of cool is I just confess everything to Jesus now. You know when you do something and you're like, I don't know if that was right or not, and like these are the consequences that I'm walking out now, and it seemed like the right decision, but maybe it wasn't. And like that stuff I just confess to Jesus now. And I'm like, hey, I did a thing. I'd love to know if it was right or wrong, but either way, I know you got my back. I don't have to spend so much time like living in regret or trying to decide whether or not I should regret. I'll just tell him. The other piece of that, like a sinner who sinned against, is just confessing my pain that's from other people. It's uncomfortable to talk about it, but I trust that Jesus is the space that I want to talk about it in. And to talk about the way I've been sinned against, not as an excuse for the way that I go on sinning, but just that both are there. The way that the parable talks about the sun coming up and scorching, Jesus explains that that's tribulation and persecution. Not tribulation like end times, tribulation like life pressing in on you, when life puts the pressure on, when life turns up the heat, when life scorches. And so our choices in that, or our options in that moment is, in my experience, burn out or dig in and deepen your roots. When life turns up the heat, we want to deepen our roots in the good news to keep going. Verse 22. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word. My eyes just like... This is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. That word unfruitful really hit me a bit more this week. That's just the last thing that I would ever want to be called. So we're talking about good, moist dirt. It's not dry. It's not full of rocks. It's real dirt. It's off the beaten path. It's not going to get trampled on. But in that good-ish dirt, thorns are going to grow up too, right? Like, they're going to thrive there as well. These are our worries that are kind of worthless. It's just such hard work, I think, to stay focused. It's why I'm trying to lean into the daily office more, and like that morning and evening and every hour I need thee kind of vibes. Not a sentence I ever thought I'd say, but there you are. Like, I just need all the help I can get to stay focused on the good stuff that sprung up on me and not let it get choked out by these false promises of goodness or the things that just make me so, so anxious. I want to tell you a story about my yard. I've made it. Honestly, it's like my whole personality right now to be cutting out thorns, literally and metaphorically. Like, my hands are just wrecked. I broke my, like, pruning shears because I've been just going insane. My husband's, like, worried about me. It's, like, a lot of cutting right now. But, okay, so last year, I'm in our kitchen, and I'm looking out the window at this mess of blackberries, which is like most of the property that we live on, which is great. We have freezers full of blackberries, and we make everything with them, and it's a real joy. But I'm looking at this one, it's more than we can pick. And I'm looking at this one mess of blackberry, and I see this little green branch of willow. There was a willow tree in there. I never knew that. Like, it's so covered in blackberries. And so I asked Clayton, I'm like, is there a willow tree out there, or am I tripping? Because weeping willows are my favorite tree. Because, like, what tree is called weeping willow? That's so cool. And one of the houses I grew up in had a huge weeping willow. And that was, like, the place where my sister and I would play and fight less than inside. So I was really excited to find out that there's this willow in our yard. And so I went out, and I, like, all I did for 3 days last year was just, like, cut back all the blackberries. And there's just this dead willow with, like, one little bit of green on it. And there also was, like, a cedar tree in there that I had missed. Like, I had never seen it. And then as I got further in, there was another little tree that, like, it's so little I can't tell what it is yet. But I think it was planted there intentionally before my time. So that was last year. I cut it all down. And then this year, it was all dead enough that I could, like, rake all the dead out. And we've been having bonfires all week. And then this happened while I was away this week. This was just, like, Jesus' kindness to me that this willow is, like, covered in buds. I think I could maybe make my own little parable about the fact that that happened while I was away. And I didn't have to do that last little bit of work. But anyways, this is, like, my ongoing labor of love. And that's what it is, to keep anxieties at bay, to keep ourselves from pursuing these false promises of life. It's just, like, ongoing work to cut out what we don't need, to rake out the dead stuff and the waste. And then when we make room, just God just breathes new life in there. As for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it. He indeed bears fruit. I really like Luke, so I want to read Luke's version, if that's okay. I tried to stick with Matthew. I tried my best. Luke 8:15. As for that in the good soil, they are those who, hearing the word, hold it fast in an honest and good heart and bear fruit with patience. There's just nothing in this life that I want more than that to be true. I taught on this passage a couple months ago at a church plant in Nanaimo that I'm on the board for, and wanted to bring it to you guys as well. And so this week while I was away, I had to make a lot of adjustments. Like, that's an audience that is mostly nuns and duns, and so I have to be a lot gentler with the Jesus word and some of those things. But anyways, my heart was to be able to bring something special for you guys. If the Spirit wanted to tell you guys something specific that was more than just a good exegesis. And that's when I saw this last sentence of bear fruit with patience. So if that feels like it means something to you, then it's for you. I was thinking about our church and how a lot of us are very, like, missional people. When we came in here, like, we really like Jesus. And we really want to tell everyone about him and do the things. And maybe some of us have had a habit in the past of jumping to that doing and bearing fruit. And the invitation I've received in this church in the last 3 years is to just, like, take a beat and do the mission in my heart and to be patient about the fruit. And I think we've been in that church in that season for a while as a body. And maybe the Spirit just would like to encourage us to keep being patient. And I don't know what that means for tomorrow or next month or next year, but, like, good fruit's gonna come, hey? And I'm so excited. And we could just be patient and non-anxious in the waiting. So I would love if we could pray for that. Pray for all of these things that can get in the way. But just remembering that, like, Jesus is alive. This word of truth is alive. it's not always our job to do all the pruning and the softening, but that he sees that, he's going to meet us there. And when we do outreach, we're going to have way more empathy for the people who reject us, right? It's like, oh yeah, I get that. I'm that way sometimes too. So if we could pray this together, as Ryan comes up and we turn to the table. Creator God, who knows us and sees our stories, we ask that you would soften us, you would strengthen us, and you would keep us in your living, loving truth. We daily embrace new life and patiently anticipate the good fruit you are growing.